And today's Tailwind Tip of the Trail is brought to you by our own SoCal Coyote, Jimmy Dean Freeman. Jimmy,
what's our tip?
Your tip is to become one with the trail. A lot of times we are trying
Hold on, Jimmy. Give respect to the tip, Scott.
You can edit that out.
Okay? I'm not editing anything. Jimmy, go ahead. You have my reverence.
I apologize.
It's okay. I'm trying not to laugh as I'm saying it too. The tip of the trail is to take what the trail gives you.
A he just changed his tip.
He did.
Because he's making it up on the way. Go ahead, Jimmy.
Go ahead.
See if it changes again.
I need a new introduction. I can't.
And today's Tailwind Tip of the Trail is brought to you by our
Tailwind Nutrition.
Tip of the Trail.
Tip of the Trail.
Is brought to you by... I got to raise my game.
Do this again, all right?
From the top.
Take three and action.
And this is the Tailwind Tip of the Trail brought to you by our own SoCal Coyote, Jimmy Dean Freeman.
Jimmy.
Yo, I say your tip of the trail is to take what the trail gives you. A lot of times we get so focused on race goals and average pace per mile and checkpoint to checkpoint splits that instead of checking in on how we feel and what there is to do right now, we get too focused on things that will blow us up. If you focus on your perceived exertion and your calorie, fluid, and electrolyte intake, the trail will dictate how fast you should go at any given point in a race. Take what the trail gives you, both in racing and training, and you'll run your fastest times.
Yeah, I like that there's times that you can make some time up. I know that I've heard that Tim Tweetmeyer, before the sun goes down, when it's going to become darker out, he puts a little more coal to the fire. Well, many races he's done by the time the sun goes down, but he knows he's going to be slowing down a little bit. He knows it's going to get a little bit cooler. So the experienced man that's done Western States 25 times puts a little more effort as that sun starts to decrease. Would that be an example, Jimmy Dean?
Absolutely, 100%. Take what the trail gives you. Isn't just related to the terrain itself, but the conditions of the race, the time of day, and how you feel. The way things are going.
That's beautiful.
Let's make that a shirt.
Okay.
Thanks for joining this tip of the trail brought to you by Tailwind Nutrition.
And Jimmy Dean Freeman. Thank you, Jimmy.
You guys are welcome.
Are we recording?
I'm not nervous. I got this. Let's just do it.
Edit this crap out. You better edit that crap out.
Ashley, you know he's not going to edit a damn thing.
He better edit a darn thing. No cuss words on here.
And it was a miserable, miserable day.
Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we're sitting in a room, Scott, and we've got on the other end of the line Greg McMillan of McMillanRunning.com.
And if you didn't catch that, we will link it in the podcast description.
Wait, Scott, do you think I just kind of slurred that out?
Well, no, I'm just thinking that there's some people that are running right now listening to this podcast, and they're thinking when they get to the end of the run, they're a little loopy.
Right, right.
And they're thinking, now, what was that website?
Point well taken, Scott. McMillanRunning.com, where there's all kinds of great stuff. Here's how I came across Greg McMillan. I was at home, and not one to like to receive letters, right? Because usually, what's that mean, Scott?
Means you have to go out to the post box?
No, it means you have to pay a bill.
Oh.
and it came from Julie Fingar, a race director around here, and she sent me a photograph from Runner's World of his article called... Rest.
Give it a rest.
Give it a rest. And it's
the lost art of recovering between training cycles. And we'll also link that.
And I didn't know if that was a hint that I needed to slow down or she just thought it would be good for a podcast. So I looked at the bottom of the page, saw Greg's name contact and reached out to him. He was generous enough to join us today. Welcome to Trail Runner Nation podcast, Greg.
Well, thank you. It's an honor to be here.
Well, thanks. Now, as we do always in the beginning of podcasts, we kind of like to talk about some of your heritage. Where do you come from? What kind of running have you done? And let's find out a little bit more about Greg McMillan.
Well, like a lot of runners, I started running in high school. I mean, I was very active as a young boy and ran and played all the time like we did back in those days. And then really fell in love with the sport in high school and was able to win a state championship in the mile run and then ran in college and continued to always try to get better and better. And now that I'm sort of older and in the master's division, I'm not faster, but I'm still always trying to get a little bit better. Love trail running. I live in Flagstaff, Arizona, where we are blessed with more trails than we can run. Enjoy racing on the trails. Won the Masters National Trail Championships for the marathon in 2009 when I first turned 40. So I quite enjoy, like most people probably listening to this podcast, getting out on the trails and challenging myself.
Greg, just for fun, you know, you said you're probably what now, 43?
44.
Okay,
44.
That is a master.
So
that's still young.
So we're about the same age. We're all about the same age. Back in high school, when you won the state championship in the mile, what time was that?
Four minutes 24 seconds.
Okay, that's
is what I ran in
that's
high school.
Screaming back then.
Yeah.
Well, it was okay back then. Now, of course, they run so fast it makes you feel slow, but. That was really important to me. I really did get into the sport like a lot of us do. I found running to be the thing that really got me going. And I was lucky that we had a good team. Even though I'm from rural Tennessee, we should not have been good. It was just a bunch of country bumpkins running, but we were really dedicated and we worked hard and we had a great coach who built sort of that team environment that young men wanted to be part of something bigger than themselves. And I had a mentor in an upperclassman, and he had won the state title the year before. And I just said, that's what I want to do. That's important to me. I want to carry on this legacy of we're good runners. And I was able to do it. And I think from that point on, the die was cast that I was going to be involved in running. Been lucky enough that not only could I enjoy the competitive side of it, for quite a while, but then also get the opportunity to work as a coach with a lot of runners. And I've coached high schoolers and college, and bulk of what I do is coaching everyday runners, people that are trying to get better, whether that means they're coming off the couch or out from behind the computer to get started, or the bulk, of course, are trying to break some time threshold or qualify for the Boston Marathon. And then lucky enough to work with a few at the front of the pack and athletes that have gone to the Olympic Games. It's really been, that's why I love the sport so much, because everybody, it's all inclusive, because we all are trying to be our best, and that's fun to be around.
So you left the track at high school and found some coaching, but you also received some education. Where'd you go to school? Because you have a little background in science as it applies to running.
Yeah, and that really started in high school. When I got into the sport and fell in love with it, I just started to read everything I could. And at that time, there wasn't the internet like there is today. And so decided that's what I was going to pursue in college. And so I have an undergraduate degree from the University of Tennessee in kinesiology, which is sort of a combination of anatomy and biomechanics. Because I was, like most runners, injured enough to try to want to figure out how do we solve this injury puzzle. And then went on to get my master's degree in exercise physiology at the University of South Carolina, where I studied under Russ Pate, who got his PhD at the University of Oregon in 1974. So you know all the people that he was around at that time, from Prefontaine and Bowerman and Dellinger. And he had been top 10 at Boston and several Olympic trials. So I really was attracted to programs and professors where it wasn't just the theory and the science, there was also the application. And that's sort of what has become my philosophy, is this idea of taking proven practices from great coaches and athletes, blending that with what we now know of exercise science to create training programs that are optimal for each individual, because we are all so different as runners, and we need to figure out sort of our particular traits And if, once you figure that out, then you can really take any training program and begin to modify it and tweak it so that you get the absolute most from that training. And that, to me, is a really good way to approach training and racing.
So there really isn't a cookie cutter way for everyone that they should train this way and check the box, that there is, you recognize that there's some individual characteristics and training principles that will applied correctly to different people that will work, you know, to give you the best benefits. But there's one I'm sorry, go ahead.
There's no doubt that the individualization is the key, and generic programs will help you and you can get started. But usually your second or third time through, you need to start modifying and tweaking things so that it is a little bit more specific to you.
Good. And I'd like to get into some of those specifics in a minute, but there's what attracted me was this article, and there seems to be one thing that we can all use a good dose of, and that's some rest. So
I'd
actually like to ask you, how did you come up with that
concept,
topic, or realization that rest is important? And when you say rest, it's not, you know, taking a day off. You know, the article revolves around taking a season or a long period of time off, like after the racing season, taking like a month or two and just doing something else. How did you come up with that?
Well, I get to coach a lot of sort of middle of the pack runners, and a lot of runners these days, there's so many races and we all want to do them all. Right. And, a lot of these athletes were coming to me because they kind of hit a plateau. They hit a point where they had trained, they improved, but they were kind of stuck and they weren't able to take their fitness to the next level and usually accomplish something important to them, whether that was qualifying for Boston or breaking 4 hours in the marathon or breaking 20 minutes in the 5K, whatever it was. And what I noticed in reviewing their training logs was that they would simply move from one training cycle to the next training cycle. There was never any break. So they would finish a marathon, and within a week or so, they're back into full training, getting ready for another marathon. And this cycle, I just started seeing this pattern a lot. And it doesn't fit in with our psychology and physiology. Our psychology and physiology is set up such that, and we know this from day-to-day training, right? You do the training stress, that's the workout, that's the run, that depletes the body of its energy sources. It may disrupt some of the musculoskeletal system, and then you have to give it a little time to recover. And it'll build back stronger and say, okay, if you're going to do that to me, I'll be more prepared for that activity the next time. And so you have this stress-rest cycle that we utilize on a daily basis, weekly basis, and so forth. But we also need to do that in sort of our more of a macro view. We need to respect that physiologically and psychologically, you do need some downtime. And after the more serious or impactful that training cycle has been, so for the marathon or, you know, maybe at a long season of running road races or short trail races or, you know, something really high in the mountains that was stressful to you, you need to take a little bit of recovery. And respect that that's how the body works. It will rejuvenate, it will recover, it will grow stronger, and mentally you'll be refreshed so that you can then have a better quality next training cycle. And that's where I was seeing the breakdown in a lot of athletes, is that they had the fitness they were trying to carry from one training cycle to the next, but they weren't fresh enough to actually realize that fitness in the next training cycle. It was a little bit suppressed by sort of an accumulating fatigue. And if they just rest up a little bit, then they're able to have better quality training within that that next training cycle. And when they did that, whenever I sort of adjusted their training to have this sort of block of rest, I don't mean they're just laying on the couch eating bonbons all day. I just mean that they're removed from, I'm not training at the moment. And that might be a week, that might be 2 weeks, it might be longer, whatever they might need. If I inserted that, the quality of the next training cycle was better. And as a result, the racing was better, and they were able to get over the sort of performance plateau they had. They kind of got stuck in.
One of the things you state in the article is you either pick your time for a rest, or the time will be chosen for you. That's a great. Right. That's a great line. Can you kind of build a little bit on that concept?
Yeah, I mean, most of us. This is the way the body works, right? You either choose, I'm going to take this break at this time, or the body eventually will force you to do it through injury or burnout or just a lack of enthusiasm or illness. You know, you can suppress the immune system so much that you get sick. So you have to put it in there. It's going to happen. And if you ask runners, they will say, at some point I had to take a rest, even if they didn't want to. So what I try to do is just pre-plan for it. Plan for the rest on your own terms. So then your training is usually a little bit smarter, and the rest isn't forced upon you. You're not overtraining. You don't get hurt, because being hurt while you're training is the worst. So you want to avoid that, so you try to plan to avoid it. And the same thing with emotional burnout or your interest level in really getting out there and being as disciplined and dedicated as it takes to achieve your goals. Those things are important. And I just really think, you know, as the coach, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to say, this is a period of time when you need to bring your A game. We're in heavy training. This is when we're getting ready for this event. And then there'll be another period where, hey, go take a vacation. Go put time back into all the people that support you while you are in heavy training. Do some of the things that you don't get to do when running is really your priority. And then there are other blocks where you're just building your basic fitness. The bulk of the year, really, is you're just building your basic fitness to get ready for your race-specific training. Let's plan that. And if you plan it, then it really... you see the sort of improvement begins to become kind of like a snowball effect, where you have success, you take a little break, you come back, you can train better, more intensely or more quality or quantity or whatever, or maybe a mix of both. And then your performance goes up again, you take another rest, and you can kind of recreate the cycle that we all enjoyed when we first started running, because we kind of get spoiled when we start with continual improvement. You can return to that somewhat if you schedule these recovery breaks.
Let's talk,
and that's what I try to do with athletes.
Let's talk a little bit about during that build phase or whatever phase you're in, but your high activity phase, of acknowledging and recognizing some repetitive use type of injury, whether it's a knee or a foot, you name the body part that you see coming up, and having enough discipline and courage maybe to say, I need to back off, and I need to back off for the next 3 days or this next week. I'm going to make an easy week and go outside of my schedule that I had set, because I acknowledge this is a problem that's coming on. And I don't want it to be a 3 week problem. I'd like it to be a 3 day problem, and recognizing it early.
It's very difficult for us, isn't it? We're stuck in our routine, and we're disciplined. I mean, part of why we're good at this sport is that we're disciplined. And we like the routine of getting out there. And if we have a training plan, we like to check those boxes that I got all those runs in. But the worst thing in the world is being the fittest spectator at a race. A race that you had entered.
That's a quote.
A race that you had a bib number waiting for you. And you're there on the sidelines cheering for others when you know you're really fit. I had this experience last year. I was going to run the Boston Marathon in 2012. And as happens with some of us who were good a while back and now a little older and slower, my mind kind of got caught up in the training. And I was excited, and I started pushing, and I started ignoring those little signals from my body that, hey, mister, we're not used to doing this. You're ramping things up a little too fast. And sure enough, about a month out from the race, I was injured. And so I'm in Boston cheering for others, going, that should be me. Whereas this year, I went into the training cycle for Boston and I said, I'm not getting hurt. If I feel anything, I'm taking the next day off, completely off. I'm not going to cross train. I'm not going to do anything. I'll do some prehab or, you know, injury recovery work, but I'm not going to do it because I'm going to get to that starting line. And I tell you, it really allows you to have great training. because you immediately nip anything in the bud. Because for me, and I think for most people, a complete day off from running gives a lot of extra time for the body to heal. And if you just have a smart training plan, it can really help you. And if you, again, if you're okay with that, then you can avoid injury, which is the number one problem we have in our sport. And that's what gets me to the starting line these days. I'm just trying to be better at listening to my body. I've fought the same battles everybody fights with their brain, keeping pushing when they shouldn't, but I'm trying to be smarter in my old age.
You know, in addition to, you know, just being this type A personality that you have to stick to a routine, I think that there's a lot of fear with runners, whether it's taking off a day or 2 days or 3 days or taking a full month off. They're afraid that they're going to lose their fitness. Is that true? And how much fitness do we lose? And how quickly can we gain it back?
Well, the body's funny, isn't it? If you take 2 or 3
Mine
days
is.
Off, yeah. you would think that the body would hold on to fitness with all of its life, right? It seems like that would be the way. But you take a few days off and you start to running and you feel like you've never run before. Obviously, it just feels that way. You haven't lost all your fitness. You've just lost a little race sharpness, a little sort of your sharp end fitness, if you will, and your body needs to get back into the rhythm. But you don't lose everything. And when you've been fit before, it's easier to get back. The first trip up the mountain of fitness is the hardest. Getting back up there is usually a little easier because you're raising this base level of fitness that will serve you long term. And we also have to respect that it's okay to get a little out of shape. That's probably good for us to get a little out of shape, to allow these body systems to recover, the mental system to recover and refresh. Because as you do a training cycle, and we have to remember this, if you're training to race, which is different than training to train, but if let's assume the runner's training to race, then we will agree that the race is the most important thing. That's what you want to get to. So all of the training needs to be building toward that race. If you are super fit at the beginning of your training cycle, you're not going to make it to the race. You will plateau. So you kind of want to be out of shape so you can gradually build your fitness toward that peak fitness at the race itself. And that's different than just trying to be fit all year. That's a different kind of mindset and way to approach it. And we have to get more in tune with appreciating the process of getting fit, the process of building our endurance, the process of building our stamina, the process of building our speed, and the process of building our sprint. Those can happen over time, and it's okay to be a little out of shape so you're not pushing too hard. You respect, oh, I've got work to do, so that you can time, I want to be in my best shape at the race and not, you know, a week, 2 weeks, a month before. Because I think most of us have done that. We've improved, we've gotten too fit too quick, and we're not as ready for the race as we could be.
You know, one thing you mentioned in the article is, as you go into a, let's say, off-season rest cycle for, you know, a few weeks or a month or longer, go in there with the expectation that it's okay to gain weight. You mentioned in the article that some of these elite athletes that take and really use that rest period to their advantage will gain, you know, 5 to 15 pounds. And that's okay. If you go into it thinking that, you know what, I am going to gain, because most of these, now I'm not putting myself in this category, but the runners that you're talking about are really the elite, really focused athletes that are really lean. It's okay for them to gain 5 to 15 pounds.
Yeah, I like it. I coach Olympian Andrew Limoncello, and he went on his honeymoon, and he had just finished a marathon, so he was. You know, his racing weight, like we all of us try to get down to when the race comes. And in that honeymoon period, which I think was a week or 10 days, he went on one of those all-inclusive cruises where you can eat 24 hours a day, and he gained 18 pounds.
Wow.
Which is a lot for him because he's kind of a little guy. But I was happy to hear that. because I knew, okay, this guy for sure should be completely recovered from the marathon mentally and physically, and then we'll have to respect coming back to training. So we won't push it to, you know, we need to give a little time for him to rebuild his fitness. And that helped us get ready for the next event, because I didn't want him to peak too soon. I didn't want him to worry about, I've gained some weight. What am I? It's like, that's perfect. That's where you want to be starting out for this next training cycle. And you don't want to, you know, obviously gain a lot of weight, but it's not bad. That weight will come off when you do the training. You had it off before, so it'll come off again, and that's okay.
That poor guy, you know, he's going to always look back to his, this is what weight I was when I got married, and it's going to be it's going to be race weight.
He's going to have all those honeymoon pictures of him chubby.
Yeah, that's right. Well, I joked that, he's probably the skinniest guy that made the cruise financial person upset because he ate so much that he ruined the finances of the buffet. You know, they're supposed to make all this money on the buffet, and he ate them out of house and home, I believe.
That's right. The prices of your ticket, they have a scale right underneath that counter, and they say, yeah, okay, we'll take you for $495.
You know, I have another question. As you were going through this, you said it's probably not ideal for you to go into your race preparation or your ramp up to a race in excellent shape, that you're going to hit a plateau and not get any better. What kind of time frame do you typically see? And I know it's different for different people and different races, but let's just say, since we're Trail Runner Nation, that we're let's just throw in 50K. If you're training for a 50K, how long of a do you recommend for a ramp up to prepare for a 50K generally?
Well, it depends on the athlete, obviously. You know, some people, if they're just getting into the sport and the 50K is a new event for them, then Ian Torrance, who works with me and, you know, he's kind of an ultra coaching guru, he'll give them more time so they have more time to build up their mileage and do the workout, learn the workouts they need to do, dial in the nutrition, the equipment, and all of that. So that training cycle may be much longer, maybe 16 weeks, could be 20 weeks. It depends, again, on the athlete. But the more experienced the athlete, you actually want the training cycle, the race-specific part, to be very short. You want that to be as short as it can be, because that's the most dangerous part. You know, it's when you're doing the heaviest volume and the heaviest intensity, which is usually that sort of 2 to 8 weeks out from an event. That's when you're doing the heaviest work. You want to keep that as short as possible. So the more fit a person is, sort of their basic fitness level, you want to shorten those cycles. And you really only want to feel in good shape in that sort of about a month before the race is when you should start feeling like, okay, I'm coming around. I feel like my goal is going to be doable. 6, 8, 10 weeks before, you should feel like, I don't know if I'm going to accomplish my goal. I don't feel in shape to do that. Because if you already feel in shape to do it, it's going to be difficult to hold that fitness all the way until your event. So I'm a fan of, you know, the bulk of a year is your basic fitness building. And then try to keep your race-specific work as short as possible to accomplish your goal. The more experienced you are, the shorter that can be. The less experienced you are, the longer it can be. Somewhat because you need more time to build, to understand the workouts, to learn how you feel during those workouts and be able to execute them better. But nonetheless, you're always trying to keep as much of the heaviest training as short as possible. And that's a little different than the way a lot of runners, they want to do as much training all the time as they can to see if they can reach a high fitness level. And that's not the best strategy, in my opinion. The best strategy is work on your basic fitness, sort of shore up all the weaknesses and build what, you know, preparatory work, whether that's mileage or hills or whatever it is. And then try to go into your race-specific phase, which is usually that last 4 to 10 weeks before an event. That's when you want to really be doing your best training, having your best results.
You know, Greg, that makes a lot of sense to me. And as you were speaking through that, I started to think about, if I had a car and I ran it as hard as I could every single time I took it out to the track, I'd expect something to break down. There's just no way that I could rev it to redline all the time and not expect some type of mechanical fatigue to happen somewhere. But if I took that same car and practiced my lines, because this is an oval track that I'm speaking of about this race car, and I took the right lines and I practiced how I was going to, you know, approach certain things and pulling into the pit stop and all those things, and just worked through that I would become very, very good at that piece of it, and I wouldn't break this vehicle down. And I've got to think that's the same way with our body. If we're out there just hammering all the time at our peak level or close to it, something's going to give. But if we want to show up to that race line ready to go, strong, sharp, peaked, then we do exactly as you said. We ramp up to that, so we spend the least amount of time at that very top piece where we can just really put the pedal to the metal with our body, if you will, and reduce the risk of breaking down, but still be at a very high level of performance.
That's right. And we have to admit that injury is the thing that gets us all. It's that we get hurt. So we have to figure out, and everybody's a little different, but we have to figure out how to reduce our risk of injury. And the best way to do that is not to be pushing at 100% of what you can tolerate all the time. Just back it off a little bit for the bulk of the year. Train at a level that you know is good for you. So I'm a good example, because at one point in my life, I could run 70 to 100 miles a week. And, you know, I got hurt like everybody else did, but I was younger and I could recover, and that was sort of normal. Well, now that won't work for me. I would be hurt all the time. So I just keep backing it down to where I find, you know, I can run a certain level and be healthy year round. And then if I'm getting ready for the Boston Marathon or some other particular event that I want to do, that's when I ramp it up to closer to what I feel like would be my maximum level. If you take that approach and you stay injury free, you can build your fitness year after year. And that's the fun thing about the sport, is it's not an instant gratification sport. We know it's a long grind. You want to be able to say, I'm here this year, and next year I plan to be at a new higher level. And the way that happens is you have to stay injury free. And most of us know kind of that level of where we're risking injury. And so I just say, hey, back off of that bulk of the year. Just be consistent. Don't get hurt. And then pick your battles. Pick your times where you say, all right, I'm getting ready for this 50K trail race. So I know I need to put in these long runs. I maybe need to do some training workouts that are more intense than I've been doing. That's okay. I'll ramp up how I take care of my body. And for this period of time, I'm going to stay on top of it. But I'm not going to live there too long, because I know then I'm risking injury. Because like I said, when I'm injured, I would give $1,000 if somebody could fix me that day. So we all want to be healthy and go ahead and plan for it. Don't be the fittest spectator. That's the worst thing in the world.
I'll take your $1,000. I don't have a very good refund policy
or very good track record
or very good guarantee, but I'll take your money.
I'm not injured at the moment.
Okay.
So sorry.
He's a smart runner. He doesn't spend that much time at the peak.
You know, the first exposure that I had to this whole theory was a good friend of ours, Julie Fingar, who's an elite athlete. Mm-hmm. She has at any given time just a really good base fitness that involves a lot of different types of cross training, not just running. She's a yoga fanatic and believes that that's the way to train. But she can, within what, Don?
Four weeks? Yeah, 4 to 5 weeks.
She can pick a race 4 to 5 weeks out and do her thing to train for it and perform extremely well. But it's and her theory is it all comes from a strong, deep base fitness level that she maintains year round.
And she has confidence that she can do it.
Right.
There's another big component.
I think that's key.
She knows that she can pull it off and that she doesn't show up to the start line going, oh my gosh, I only trained 4 or 5 weeks. This isn't going to work out for me. She's there knowing that
she has experience that it works.
It does, yeah.
And that's
the key. The key is building that that basic fitness. And that comes from day after day, week after week, year after year of consistent training. And the way to accomplish that is to not get hurt. And so you have to figure out a training mechanism, a training load, that you won't get hurt. You want to reduce your injury risk, because most of us are looking at training the wrong way. We're looking at training for what will achieve my goal. Like, what do I have to do to achieve my goal? I've got to do this. Instead, we should say, okay, what will keep me healthy, number one, and then achieve the goal? Because that's the secret to the whole thing, is trying to just stay healthy. And if you do stay healthy, like she has, then you can just add these periods of, and they seem really short, don't they? The periods of 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks, and you go, how can they get fit so quick? Well, that's because they have this large base fitness level, and that's what they're stacking this race-specific training on top of. And when you do that, then you don't need a lot of time to get ready to perform your best. And to be honest, you're mentally fresh. You're never like, oh, just let me get this race over with. I'm tired of training for it. You do feel that excitement going into it. I think that's the person that has a much better chance of success in the race. Is if you feel I'm fit, I'm not overtrained, I'm not injured, and I'm excited for this race, as opposed to what we've all done before, where we're kind of, I'm a little banged up, I'm kind of ready for this to be over, the training sort of became a grind, and I didn't really enjoy it. That's not the scenario we want. So I'm a big fan of plan your year where the race is the small part of the training. And the rest is really focused on that sort of base building.
And again, to reiterate, the base training can be a variety of different fitness activities. It doesn't have to be running. And the other thing that I'm going to throw in there is when you're training in this base build phase, the idea that was drilled into me when I was in high school and in high school sports was, no pain, no gain. That has nothing to do with base building. If there's pain,
that doesn't work in our sport.
It does not.
That's the wrong sport. That mantra is for other sports, but it's not for running.
What, knife throwing? What sport is that? No pain, no gain. Work for.
That's what my football coach told me.
Well, I think it comes from more of the contact sports and the high intensity, explosive sports where people are trying, and the pain that they're talking about is just the discomfort of fatigue. Right. And the pain that runners usually have the issue with is a physical pain that leads to injury. And so we need to use a different mantra than the no pain, no gain.
Let's circle back to rest for just a second and stick with Julie, because there's a comment that Julie made just the other day. As I'm training for a 100-mile event right now, and I had run a 50-mile run. So that was on a Saturday. And we talked afterwards, and she said, now just go and rest until Thursday and enjoy the benefits that you've just worked for and build, get stronger, and go out and run on Thursday. Don't feel you have to get out there Monday and Tuesday or Wednesday. Just go out there and recover and get ready again.
Do a swim, an easy swim,
other
or
things,
hop on a
right.
bike or something easy,
yeah.
Low impact.
Really good advice, because the race itself is a very large training stress. It's a training stimulus. And that must be balanced with an equivalent rest after. And if that's, you know, my first coaching mentor was Guy Avery. He's a really good coach. And he always said optimal stress plus optimal rest equals optimal progress. And that really drilled into me this idea that, yeah, you can go and do a really hard workout, something that is very stressful, very fatiguing, and just balance it with you've got to add a little more rest after that. That just makes sense. The lighter the stress, the less rest you need. And if you respect that, then the body has time. Because most of the problems we have is that we're under-recovering. It's not that we're overtraining necessarily, it's that we're under-recovering. And so you have to respect, boy, that was a really hard effort. Now, mentally, you'll want to get out and run again, right? You have the schedule, you want to achieve, you want to check those boxes, and you want to stay on your routine. But ultimately, you need to rest so that the physical part can kind of catch up. But that's what gets injured is our musculoskeletal system. So we always need to be thinking about the musculoskeletal system, not so much the cardiovascular system, or even our sort of psychological system, because those don't get injured. And we need to respect that rest component.
Now let's talk a little bit about, since we're on rest, let's talk about the value of sleep. One of my favorite topics, because I really like to get experts on like yourself telling me to go to bed early and sleep in more. And I'm just, that validates my desire to sleep all the time. But what about, as training intensity increases, the benefits of a long good rest?
Well, sleep is the best recovery you can do. That is, I mean, it's part of our being a human being, is that we have to have sleep. That's where we do our best recovery. And when you start shortening that, you interrupt this component that gives you the most rest. And if you look at it, most of us can get more rest. Most of us do have some time, particularly in the evening before bed, that we're not really doing anything productive. We could probably get away without watching reality TV or looking at Facebook or whatever we're doing for the last half hour or 45 minutes before bed. We could add a little bit of that. And we know that a consistent bedtime really influences your ability to recover. So the main thing is focus on get to bed consistently each night and try to, you know, make sure you have that quality sleep. And some people can do more of it than others based on their life schedule and other commitments. But the main thing is to respect that sleep is the most valuable recovery that you can give your body. And the harder you're training, the more you want to try to sleep and rest.
I've gone out for the long Saturday run and have had a tough week where sleep was an issue. And we've all had those long hours and long weeks. And I've shown up for that Saturday run, and it felt like it was all uphill. I just was half the strength. I mean, it, not having sleep zaps you. And to the just on the other side of it, if you have had the sleep that you need, it's like I could run all day, and this, I feel strong coming up these hills. There's just a huge difference I've found in filling your tank with that sleep ingredient.
And we should also respect that there are times when we won't get good sleep, even though we want to. Or we'll have restless nights, and when we plan to sleep, we won't be able to. And you need to account for that in your training. So if that happens, then you have to know, oh, well, I better modify this workout. There's no reason to expect that workout to go as well as if you had good rest. So you're under recovered. And so you need to adjust, modify your training based on that sort of reality, that you're not as recovered as you need to be. And that's the individualization I'm talking about. That's where you become the master of your training plan. And the training plan isn't the master of you. That's when you see runners, it really clicks for them, when they have the confidence and the comfort to be able to say, boy, I didn't sleep the way I wanted to. Instead of doing that tempo today, I'm going to move it to tomorrow. Mm. Or instead of trying to run, you know, whatever their pace is for the tempo run, I'm going to back off 5-10 seconds per mile, and I know that's going to be good for me today. It wouldn't be good if I was fully rested, but for today, that'll be good for me. Boy, when you have that control over your own training, it's going to make a big difference in how you're going to have the training cycle go as well as the race. That's something I try to impart on the athletes I coach.
All right, Coach McMillan, what if one of your athletes goes out there and you have a 12-mile run scheduled for that person that day, and they went out and they said, you know, Coach, I just felt heavy. I wasn't into it. I was mentally out of it. It's the last thing I wanted to do was run. I can think of anything, including, you know, cleaning out a closet that I would rather do, and I just turned back and I only put in 2 miles, Coach. What's your comment to that runner?
Thank you would be my comment. Thank you for not overdoing it. The worst thing is when people feel like things aren't going well, but the schedule says I have to do this, and they push through. Because, again, they're already in a compromised state going into the workout, and now they just sort of dug the hole deeper. And so I have to adjust the program to add even more recovery time. So I like when athletes are able to recognize, boy, today's just not my day. So I have a couple of options. I can either say, I'm just going to stop and go home, it's just not my day. Or instead of doing a workout, I'll just run easy. Or I can do the workout, but let me modify the workout so that I can feel like I accomplished something. That's what athletes should be doing. And I really, if I have an athlete that is in that situation and they realize, oh, it's just not going right, and they sort of pack it in, I really appreciate that, because otherwise we could be leading into, again, instead of having to take one easy day, we might have to take three or four. And that's obviously not what we're trying to do. We're trying to build this fitness level across a training cycle, and that requires us to always be kind of ready for the training.
Now, I heard this story, and no surprise, I wasn't there, because it's about Lance Armstrong and riding a bicycle, and I couldn't keep up with that group.
It's all about the bike.
I might have been going the other way on a bike. That's the only way. And the story I heard was they had their training group, and there was a policy that if you didn't feel that you could keep the pace or the distance or whatever it was, that you had the opportunity to turn and go back, and there wasn't any opinions or nobody would place any judgment on you based on your turn. That's what an athlete needs sometimes, and they have to have permission to back off and go, and with full support of their teammates.
Mm-hmm. So, I think that's a good concept, and it's really something every runner should give themselves that out. That every runner should say, hey, it's okay for me to do that. We've been talking, most of this article and the discussion is really about being okay with resting. Being okay with saying, you know what, I just finished this training cycle for this 100-miler. I'm going to take a few weeks here where I'm not really focused on training. I'm doing some other activities. I'm running for fun. It's just relaxation time. And just in this case, we're talking more on a micro level where, hey, within the training cycle, if you feel that, take a little extra rest. It's okay. No one workout or race makes or breaks the training cycle.
That's a good point.
You're gonna have days, and sometimes those days pop up for no apparent reason, right? You just show up and kind of say, "Who stole my body? I was fit the other day, and now I don't know why I can't do this." That's just the quirks of being a human being, and you've got to be comfortable with that, and you've got to say, "You know what? Not today." And again, that's you being in control of the training plan instead of the training plan being in control of you.
So we talk a little bit about individuality, and that's one of the things that your website does so well. Is you maybe, if you could, talk a little bit about the training plans and how your system and your website helps coach people through, because I was fascinated and spent a lot of time on your site looking at different tools for runners on your site.
Yeah, I coach, like I mentioned, a wide range of runners, so people that are beginning all the way to people that are going to Olympic Games. And so I created a running calculator that could tell everyone, because I, as a coach, I needed to be able to prescribe the training paces. So I created this calculator in graduate school that would prescribe, no matter what type of runner you were, an optimal pace range for whatever type of workout you're doing. So if you're doing a long run or a tempo run or speed workout or some sprints, whatever you're doing, here's the pace range. And that was up on the website, buried within an article kind of talking about my training philosophy, and it became really popular. And then more people wanted to work with me, and so started with having personal coaching and then custom training programs. And it's been a thrill for me to be able to take this philosophy of what are proven practices from coaches and athletes, and blend that with exercise science to make training programs that are individual for each person, to try to tease out for that person, your traits are kind of this way. So even though you're training for the same event as your training partner, say it's a marathon or 50K or whatever, your training needs to look slightly different because you're kind of a different animal. And we all know this. If you train with other people, you have this experience where you might be of the same performance level in races, but in different types of workout, you're better than your training partner, and the others, your training partner's better than you are. That is the clue to the individualness of you. And if you take that information and begin to incorporate it in your training plan, you can come out with a plan that's much, much better for you than just a generic plan. And that's what we do on the website, is we try to help people look at their life look at their training history, look at their goals, figure themselves out. We try to figure out, you know, what are you like as a runner? And then modify the general principles that work to get people ready for whatever that they train for. That's the fun of it for me, is to take an individual and say, this is you, and how can we make a training plan that will really fit your life and take advantage of your strengths, overcome your weaknesses, minimize their effect so that you can have a better performance.
And your training plans reach from 800 meters to 2 miles, all the way through the half marathon, a base fitness plan, a high school off-season plan, a new runner plan, and then also specific to some marathons, because we know each profile of a marathon is a bit different. And then you head into the ultra marathon from 50K to 100 mile. And actually, you help put together some training plans for these specific distances.
Yeah, it's really fun to work with athletes, again, of all abilities, and then training for all distances. I think it's a thrill. I feel like I know virtually every race in the world, and I certainly know the weather patterns around the world, because runners are always complaining about the weather, right? So I know there's a storm front coming through there, because people are wondering how they need to adjust their training for weather. And it's been great. It's really fun for me to be able to share in something that's so important to people. It's their passion. It's what they're trying. They're trying really hard to accomplish a goal. They're trying to be better than they were. And I really respect people that are trying to balance life and work and all of this with this very important sort of interest of theirs.
You know, some of the other features that you have available on your pro subscription site, some things that caught my eye that I thought was very interesting is you have a heat adjustment calculator, which I think is a lot of, you know, as Don is preparing for Western States, it looks like it's going to be a very, very hot Western States this year.
And thanks, Scott.
You're preparing for the heat.
That's right. I sleep in the sauna.
Yeah. But there's, you know, a heat adjusted calculator. There's
adjusting for what? Adjusting your pace? Is it?
I don't know what.
Yeah, so it'll do two things. One is, if you say, I've been training in sort of normal conditions, let's say, but I'm going to do a race that's going to have sort of adverse conditions, going to be hot and or humid, then it will give you an idea of how much you should adjust your expectation on race performance, right? So if you felt like, oh, I could run 50K in normal conditions in this time, but it looks like it's going to be really hot and humid, then how much should I adjust my pace down? You know, what can I expect my time to be? And then for the training paces as well, if you find that you're training in hot and humid conditions, you have to slow your paces. Well, how much do you slow it? And that's what the calculator will show you. It also works the opposite way, so that if you do a race in very hot and humid conditions, you can convert and say, well, what was that worth in normal conditions? So say I ran a 10K in 41 minutes, but it was really hot. What would that have been like if it was normal conditions? So it kind of can convert both ways. And again, it's not a hard science with heat adjustment, because we're all very individual in how we tolerate heat. And of course, early in heat exposure, you're kind of worse at it. But then once you get acclimated, you're not as affected as much. So it's kind of a ballpark, but it does allow people who are experiencing racing or training in adverse weather conditions where it's hot and humid to give themselves a little break. Say, oh, instead of trying to run 7 minutes per mile for my tempo, I actually 7:20 is good. That's actually where I should be. And that's okay. Because if they don't know that adjustment, they feel like they failed in the workout because the pace was so much slower. But the fact is, that was the best, that was a good pace for that day. You should be okay with it.
You know, that's great. And do you think, Greg, that Craig Thornley, the race director at Western States, will recognize that? Because I really would like a sub-24 this year. And if it's extremely hot, as Scott predicts, a 27-hour might be a 24.
I think we can make a, it's called a,
is this peer reviewed? Have you had this thing vetted out by the experts? Cause I'm going to submit this.
I suspect you're going to have a hard way to go there.
All right.
I do think from having your best performance, knowing that adjustment is important. We did it last year for Boston. Remember Boston Marathon was really hot last year. And so we usually have a lot of athletes that we coach that are running the Boston Marathon. And it was great to be able to say, hey, in these conditions that are going to happen, this pace is probably your best pace. This is what it is for this day. And it allowed them to have more success on a day when you probably shouldn't have had success because they were able to make that adjustment that they needed to. And that's part of what we try to offer on the site, from the videos to the articles to the online tools like the calculator and like McMillan Pro, which has several different kind of cool features to it. We're just trying to give runners more tools to be in control of their training and racing.
That's great. If you're interested in signing up over with McMillanRunning.com, you'll find that there are some free race times and training paces that are available to you. And there's
the calculator.
And the calculator. And also there's all of the other features that we were just talking about that are available on the McMillan Pro. And so...
And it's a lot of money. Actually, it's not. I'm joking. It's like $24 a year.
$199 per month annual and $499 per month on a monthly subscription. And heck, that's a... You pay more for that and gas going up to a workout. So yeah. I would say get on this thing, take a look at it, and learn some stuff.
Now, Greg, if someone signs up for this pro program, those are just the cookie cutter programs that they're getting. What is there a place on the website where you can sign up for more of an individual program?
Yeah, that's under the tab called Training Plans on the website.
Okay.
And that lists all the different training plans are available. So again, like you mentioned before, it doesn't matter if you're sort of a high schooler in summer, you don't have a program, we can build one for you, or you're getting ready for Western States or your first 50K or the marathon or whatever. You can choose whatever distance you're training for. And then tell us how long you need training, and you can purchase it by the number of weeks you need. And that's where, you know, we'll sit down and build that custom individualized training program for you. And then if you want sort of the ultimate, which is sort of personal one-on-one coaching, then we have that available as well. And that's where there's a sort of unlimited contact, phone calls, text, email, Skype, with the coach, you know, it's back and forth so that we really get to know the individual athlete and help them with nutrition, flexibility, race preparation, and all the different things that go into making a peak performance.
And the coach is working with you, and we all know his name in this trail community is Ian Torrance, and 165 ultras, 24 of them, which were 100-mile races, and he's won 50 of the races that he's been involved with. And he's gone out and participated in the Grand Slam of ultra running. So this man, Ian Torrance, is a wealth of information.
Yeah, he's really doing a great job with ultra coaching. And his real talent is that he can work with any runner. Because a lot of people, particularly that are successful like he's been, they sometimes will just say, well, this is what I did, so you need to do this. And Ian recognizes that that's not the best strategy. The best strategy is to say, who are you, and then what training will help you get to the finish line? That may be way significantly different than what I did. And that's sort of the McMillan philosophy. The philosophy is we're all individuals. And so while we have general training principles that work to get ready for events, we need to respect that you're an individual. We need to tweak this program to make it specific for you.
Now, Coach, if I turn out on a 12-mile run at mile 2 and come back, will Ian say thank you, or will he kick my behind and tell me to get back out there and run 10 more? That's what I want to know.
I bet he would probably say thank you.
All right.
given the same parameters that were described before. Now, if you were just kind of being, you know, not tough and you needed to get the run in and you had no good reason, then probably wouldn't get a thank you. You might get a little a little bit more of a different response.
He gives you what you need is what you're saying. Well, Greg McMillan, we thank you so much for coming on and sharing some of your wisdom about rest and about and your website and all the resources that are there, all the many articles that are written that are just there to click on and read, and quite a few of them from Ian Torrance are available from links there,
too. There's some good videos on there, too, of running form.
Yeah. So good stuff. Thank you for being out there and contributing to the running community. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you.
Trail Runner Nation, if Scott, go ahead and close this thing out. We had to make a script. Can we make a script?
We're unprofessional.
All right. So go out and
anti-professional. No, you need to go to the website, trailrunnernation.com.
Right.
Right now, until the middle of June, we are doing our spring wearable.
Spring
summer. And if you live down in Australia, like I was just reminded today,
yeah,
it's the winter wearable line. But you can go and look at, do that, pre-purchase your stuff on there. We'll be shipping those out sometime in July, just in time for some of those hot races. So go to trailrunnernation.com. You can always see us on Facebook and Twitter.
At We Are Nation on Twitter.
And
go out and run.
Mas. I missed you so much that I begged you to fly and see me. You must have broke down because you finally said that you would.